Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Roz Rose the Pacific is brought to you by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Roz Rose with Dr. Kiki Sanford and Roz Savage, episode 63 for Sunday, May 2nd, 2010. Can she get there from here? Hello, everyone. Welcome to Roz Rose. I'm Dr. Kiki Sanford, and I'm glad you're joining me for the adventure of a lifetime through proxy. We're going to be living vicariously through the internet. We're going to be visiting into the life in these little brief glimpses, half an hour, once a week, as we travel following Roz Savage as she rows single-handedly across the Pacific Ocean. She started two years ago, San Francisco to Hawaii. Then last year, Hawaii to Kiribati. And then this year, Kiribati to who knows where. Maybe the weather will tell us where she's going. So on today's show, joining both myself and Roz is Lee Bruce, who is Roz's weatherman. And he's going to tell us all about Pacific weather systems and weather that may potentially be affecting Roz's journey and the location where she ends up. So, Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Roz, how are you?
I'm just great, thank you. I am reveling in a nice, relatively cool breeze for a change. Today is just perfect weather. Well, apart from the wind's not quite blowing in the right direction, but it's actually nice to be at a comfortable temperature, neither baking nor being drenched. Yesterday was a very wet, stormy, thundery, lightning-y kind of a day. So it's nice to enjoy the blue skies and the fresh breeze today.
Additionally, you got a bad sunburn because of the weather a few days ago. I was reading on your blog, it sounded like you did yourself in because of some overcast skies. Is that correct?
Yeah, I burn very easily, and I did get rather caught out on one day when it was so heavily overcast. And I should have had my sunscreen on, and I wasn't quite as diligent as I should have been. So I'm peeling quite happily now. It's not really too bad. It's not a serious sunburn. I've survived worse. So I am being just super careful now. But believe me, yesterday I had absolutely no fear of sunburn whatsoever. The cloud was so thick. But yes, I'm kind of playing hide and seek with the sun these days. I do my best to put up sarongs and things in strategic positions to try and shield myself a bit from the sun, but at the same time not putting up anything that remotely looks like a sail, which would be very much against the spirit of the enterprise.
Yeah. Where are you currently? You're below the equator?
I am. Just about 1 degree south of the equator. And in fact, yesterday I passed about 20 miles south of what is apparently the world's smallest republic, Nauru, which I almost didn't know that it was there because I see it from where I am. And on my chart, my electronic charts, I have to go into a certain level of zoom before little assholes like that actually turn up. So it was actually thanks to the comments on my blog that I was even aware that there was an island there at all. It's just a tiny little dot in the middle of the ocean. So that's where I am, just south of Nauru at the moment. And about 1 degree south of the equator, and if I carried on at my present trajectory, I would be making landfall somewhere in Papua New Guinea, I think.
Okay. And Lee, can you give us an idea about the weather that she's up against right now, and you know how the winds and the currents might be affecting her traveling to Papua New Guinea or Australia? What are you looking at?
When we first talked with Roz, we exchanged a couple of emails, and then finally had a chance to chat. And that first chat, if I remember correctly, I think I started out with saying something on the order of "you can't get there from here," which is not something that Roz wanted to hear. It is very difficult because the prevailing wind direction is for about the first half of the trip tends to be from the east, fairly light. Does have the chance, the opportunity to switch. Occasionally it comes from the north or other directions. But the second half of the trip tends to have a very persistent wind from the east-southeast and fairly strong. So, you know, the trick is how can we get Roz to a position at that halfway point where she can take advantage of that wind and not simply get driven somewhere that she doesn't want to be. So it remains to be seen. I think, you know, Roz seems to have a good attitude about, you know, what she's doing and why she's doing it. And if it doesn't exactly work out, sounds like that's going to be okay. And I think in this case, in this particular route, that's what she needs.
Yeah. What are the how are you feeling out there about the winds and the weather, Roz?
Well, as Lee says, we sort of hoped that during this first half of the journey, I might be able to make enough south that once those southeast winds kicked in, I would have a bit of leeway that I would have gone far enough south that it didn't matter if I got blown a bit north. But that doesn't really seem to be happening. Even with these lighter winds, I've been finding it reasonably challenging to make much south, which doesn't really bode the second half of the journey. But actually, as Lee says, I'm pretty flexible about this. I've been to Australia before. I know it's a great place to go to get there again. I've been there before, which is maybe an argument in favour of going somewhere different this time. And I was a bit nervous about Papua New Guinea, but then when I was at TED Mission Blue, just before I set out on this row, I was having a chat with Jean-Michel Cousteau, who's the son of Jacques. And he was telling me that Papua New Guinea was a much more interesting place than Australia. But he happens to have a few friends there. So if I find myself in PNG, then I'm sure that we could manage to make a few contacts and make the best of the situation. So I'm really pretty happy with wherever, provided that I end up somewhere. But I've got tons of food on board, and so far the water maker is working beautifully, touch wood. So there isn't really any particular pressure of time right now. So I'm still pushing fast, because even if I'm going to land in PNG, I still need to get down to about 5 degrees south of equator. Well, it might not sound that much further south than where I am, but it's always going to be challenging, I think, to make any south. So I've just got to seize any opportunity that arises whenever the weather conditions are favorable.
Yeah. So, Lee, are there favorable cyclic weather conditions that would be coming through at this time of year? You know, what are the normal wind patterns and what is the situation weather-wise in the South Pacific?
Well, primarily, again, that first half of the route is the one portion that has some variability. We looked at some wind data. There's an interesting piece of information that's available based on winds that were measured by satellite. One of the problems that we have in trying to figure out long-term weather patterns and, you know, what are we likely to see in one area. The problem over the open ocean is that we don't have a lot of real-time data. You know, sometimes you get ship reports, but they tend to be clustered with along ship routes, and the reports are few and far between. But for about a 10-year period, there's a satellite-based system called QuickSCAT, that was a sensor that would measure the roughness of the ocean, and they had correlated based on returns of a signal that would be sent from the satellite to the ocean, and how much of that was returned correlated to the roughness of the ocean, which then also correlated to the winds. And so they ended up being able to fairly accurately measure wind speed and wind direction over the open ocean. And then so now, since we've had 10 years worth of data, that has been assembled and placed into a website, and you can go in and look at what the weather pattern was during that 10-year period. Unfortunately, that particular satellite failed last fall, I think November. It stopped working, so that data is no longer available. But it's a good data set, and so we were able to look at what happened over that 10-year period along the route, and it did show that because of the season now, we're getting moving out of tropical cyclone season and into the southern hemisphere winter, and which meant that there is some variability. Sometimes you get a front or a trough that comes through the area, and you end up with a change in the wind direction, which for a rowboat is the wind direction is pretty much everything. It's extremely difficult, especially for a solo rower, to row the boat against any kind of wind. Generally, on average, a figure that about the best angle to the wind is about 30 degrees for any efficient rowing. I mean, you can sometimes try to force it beyond that, but the boat speed suffers quite a bit, which means that if the wind is prevailing mostly from the east, that means that Roz has choice of moving west northwest, west, or west southwest, and anything beyond that is very difficult, and that's what she faces. So that's why, as Roz said, that the first half of the route is about the only opportunity to try to set up if there's any chance to get to Australia. And so far, the wind direction hasn't been cooperating much.
Yeah. Roz, how does it, I mean, he's talking about the efficiency of rowing against the wind. How does it feel to you out there when you're pushing? Do you ever try and go dead in or higher than 30 degrees?
A few times, I've pretty much always had my bows pointed south, and on occasions that has meant trying to row into a headwind, but they've been just very, very light winds. As Lee says, it's not really possible for rowers to make much progress into any kind of headwind over about 8 or 10 knots. Yeah. And I feel really lucky to be working with Lee, actually, because I think I'm the 14th rowing expedition that he has weather routed for now. So he's probably the most experienced rowing router in the world, I would say. So he really knows the challenges that I'm up against out here, and it saves a lot of hassle of trying to explain why a rowboat is not like a sailboat, and just how very much more limited in my ability to maneuver I am. So I feel very lucky to be working with Lee with all that experience behind him. It's not comfortable rowing across the wind, because the waves are coming at me from the side, which means that the boat is tipping from side to side, and means there are a few air shocks when the oar misses the water altogether, or a few times when it gets stuck in the water. But I knew that this was what it was going to be like, and in fact it's been like this pretty much ever since I left San Francisco. I spent the whole time across the Pacific trying to always push south, so I've been permanently crabbing across the wind, so I'm quite used to it now. I didn't realise how lucky I was on the Atlantic to be rowing downwind on those lovely trade winds. At the time, I was, it was my first ocean. I was just going, look at the size of these waves, and oh my God. But it was all a bit stressful, and now I go, I just didn't know how lucky I was.
Do you ever think that, looking back at your decision to row from San Francisco to Australia, do you think maybe I should have gone the other way around, Australia to San Francisco?
I don't think it'd be possible to go from Australia to San Francisco. If I wanted to land in San Francisco, I'd have left from Japan, and then I'd have had to do it all in one shot. Mm. And likewise, if I wanted to end in Australia, an easier option would have been to go from Peru to Australia.
Okay.
But I didn't want to do it that way, because Niger flows route really offer the opportunity to stop off along the way, and because I've got this environmental mission, I wanted to get certain messages out. And all the publicity happens around departures and arrivals, so by breaking the journey into three stages, it would give me three bites at that cherry. So to me, it made sense to do it this way, and I realised that it was going to present certain challenges, but I knew what my priorities were. So, yeah, I'm happy with this, and if I don't quite make it to Australia and end up in PNG instead, well, it's all part of the adventure.
Exactly, and PNG might be even more of an adventure since, like you said, you haven't been there before. You don't know what to expect. It'll be fun, exciting, and
yeah,
new.
Yeah, that's right. I just hope I can make it there. I was looking at my charts yesterday, and basically wherever I aim for, there are going to be lots of little islands in the way, and so it could get quite interesting at certain stages.
Yeah.
And there is also the slight consideration of wanting to set myself up for the possibility of doing the Indian Ocean next year. And PNG isn't ideal from that point of view, but we'll just cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah.
There's a limit to how many challenges you can tackle at once.
Very well said. Now, Lee, is there an issue, is there an interaction with local weather, wind pattern, and islands, and how those might throw Roz around, and what you'll be looking at as she gets closer into, say, PNG?
Yeah, any time that you take, especially a rowboat, and get it near land, that's a problem, because you don't have that the flexibility of like a sailboat or a motorboat. You're going to be pushed based on the wind. So if there's an island in your way, you really don't have a choice. You have to either, if you can, put out a sea anchor just to simply stop your progress and hope and wait for better wind, or you have to try to find a place along the shore that's safe to land. Some places are nice sandy beaches and some are not. And so, yeah, anytime you put any kind of a landmass into the mix, it's difficult. And if you throw in several, like the Solomon Islands, then, that's going to be a trick. And Roz will have her work cut out for her, that's for sure.
Will you have your work cut out for you as a forecaster in that situation?
No, I'll just tell her to deal with it. as she gets closer to an island, depending on the structure of the island, if it's volcanic, it tends to have a high mountain. And so that will cause, if you think of water in a stream, and if you put a large boulder in the stream, then the water runs around it and flows around it. Well, the wind does the same thing to any kind of an island that has any height to it. And the wind direction gets convoluted. And even downstream, even once, if she doesn't even have to be necessarily near an island to be affected, because the water will swirl downstream from a rock, the same thing happens to the wind. And so she could be 50, 100 miles from an island and still get some effect as the wind comes around that island. So, yeah, it's a difficult situation. It's much easier if you simply stay in the water and come up to a nice sandy beach at the end.
Do you have those visions, Roz, of a nice sandy beach at the end of your trip?
Well, visions of a nice cold beer.
which, if I remember correctly, your friend from last week is supposed to get for you, right?
Actually, I prefer jetties, I think, to sandy beaches, because even sandy beaches would be quite a hazard for my rudder. So I've never tried beaching my boat, but I'm not sure I'm too keen on the idea. But I definitely prefer a sandy beach to a coral reef or a rocky shore. That's definite.
As you're out there on the water, Roz, do you have any like reflections on the weather and the changing weather that you've been experiencing? I mean, you've had tumultuous downpours and nice calm days, overcast days full of sunburn, and you know, do you have any thoughts on just the whole experience as you're out there?
Something that I'm finding this time around more than ever before, which I'm quite happy about, is that I seem to become much more accepting about things. I sort of look at Lee's forecast with an interested degree of detachment. I don't, on the Atlantic, for example, when I got a favourable forecast, I would get terribly excited about a really good day's mileage, or else if it was a poor forecast, I'd get really despondent. I was on this emotional roller coaster the whole time. And as time has gone on, I think the ocean has gradually sort of beaten me into submission. I've realised that I could drive myself crazy by getting so excited or so despondent over the forecast. So I just very much take it as it comes now. And I've become much less judgmental about the weather and also about myself. Like if it's really baking hot and I don't do well in high temperatures, I just go, well, I'll just laze around a bit more than usual during the day and do a bit more rowing after dark. I just kind of work around the weather instead of saying, well, I shouldn't be doing this, or I wish the weather was doing that. I just go, well, it just is what it is. And sort of work with it, I suppose. Which is why I can't get too bent out of shape about potentially not making it to Australia, because
right. We
always knew it was going to be challenging. And if I can't get there, then I can't get there. And there's not much point stressing about it at this stage. It's easy for me to say at the moment while I'm bobbing around happily many miles from land. When I'm about to shipwreck on a coral reef, I might be feeling a little bit too
So yeah, we'll ask you then.
I don't even worry about the coral reefs at this stage because I'm not near them now. And
right.
As Lee said, we have a strategy which involves either putting the sea anchor out or rowing all night or doing whatever it takes to avoid shipwreck, or even, I suppose, in an extreme situation, trying to arrange for a tow away from the hazard. But we'll just deal with that as it comes. So I think I'm getting more zen in my old age.
It's what it sounds like.
Things as they are.
Yeah, more zen, more living in the moment, that acceptance and awareness.
I used to spend a lot of time fighting against reality, which is a pretty futile battle, really, because reality always wins. reality / Mother Nature. So, like I say, the ocean is, in the nicest way, sort of beating me in submission, where I just go, all right, ocean, you do your thing, and I'll just get on and do mine.
Somebody in the chat room would like to know whether you experience muscle cramps with the weather changes, or just if you experience those muscle cramps in reflex to the changes in the power of the waves that you're rowing against.
Oh, no. What, you mean actually a physical reaction to changes in the weather?
Yeah, are you feeling the changes?
Not in terms of muscle cramps, no, just purely in terms of physical comfort, really. But no, I haven't noticed anything like that. I don't really have muscle cramp. It's a bit of a mystery phenomenon to me. Is it caused by lack of salt or something like that?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Potassium,
it's
sodium.
It's not something that I've suffered from at any point, actually. So, no, fortunately not.
Well, congratulations on having a very good diet that keeps you from getting muscle cramps.
I do have a ridiculously healthy diet while I'm out here, actually. If only I can say the same of dry land, but I've been eating very well.
That's fabulous. I know last year you did lose quite a bit of weight. Are you already are you dropping weight on this trip, or how's the food?
It's hard to tell. I would imagine I probably doing roughly the same as before. Which I'm quite happy about, actually. It'd be nice to be able to fit back into my clothes. I've still got plenty to spare. I'm not wasting away just yet. But I've only been out here for 12 now. So far, so good. Just feeling generally healthy and happy and, yes, as I said, remarkably zen. Oh, and can I just share a bit of exciting news with you?
Please.
Relatively hot off the press, I saw my first interesting creature today.
Oh, yay.
A whale came past at about 8 o'clock this morning. And I don't know what kind of a whale it was, because all I saw was the fin on his back. But I would guess he was probably about 15 feet long from the general scale, that I can tell. And he actually came really, really close to the boat. He was within 6 feet of my rudder.
Wow.
In fact, I was getting a little bit nervous that he might get a bit too close.
Sounds like the whale was checking you out.
I think so. They're quite curious creatures. And I was so tempted to jump in the water with my snorkel and mask and check him out. But I just get a bit nervous about getting far away from the boat. I would be in danger of getting a bit too excited in my pursuit of making friends with the whale. And I really want to pop my head up above water to find that my boat's half a mile away and I can't catch up with it. That would not be a good day at the office.
Yeah, not the best day. But a good day that you got to see a whale, and that's so neat. You have a spider. How's your spider doing?
I didn't see my spider yesterday, but it did pull grain the whole day. So if he had any sense, he was hiding somewhere. In fact, I think there are two on board, because I saw two at the same time the day before that. So, as my sister said, let's protect they're not Mr. and Mrs., or else I could end up with a whole colony of spiders on board. And I'm sure the Australian authorities would take a very dim view of that. I'm not quite sure how tolerant they are, in fact, in New Guinea either. I wouldn't want to destroy the whole ecosystem with my stowaways.
That's right, you're bringing an entire contingent with you when you arrive, wherever you arrive.
Exactly, yeah. I don't really want to introduce any non-indigenous species.
Yeah. I want to take it back to the weather a little bit. And I was just thinking about, you mentioned your whole mission, as we all know, is an ecological one. And one of the biggest current threats that we have is climate change. And I was just wondering if you could tell us a bit about the difference between weather and climate and, and what we should know about the two of them.
Sure. And you make a good point. And it's not just Roz's role, but every other rowing project that I've been involved with has always had a mission associated with it, raising money for a charity or bringing awareness to a problem. And that's one of the reasons that I really like working with rowers, is because they're not just out there because it seems like something fun to do. There's always a purpose involved. But as far as climate goes, climate is just long-term weather, really. And I think that we're maybe getting a little carried away with the whole climate change thing, because you hear it all the time. As soon as it's hot one day, somebody says, "Oh, that's global warming," and then the next day when it's cold, they say, "That's stupid global warming. That doesn't exist." But we're talking about long-term changes, and there's certainly ample evidence around the world that things are happening that aren't exactly normal. Glaciers are melting and that sort of thing. But the study of climate is something that's different than what I do. And I tend to like to leave it up to the experts, the ones that spend their whole time studying that sort of thing. Where climate comes in this case, when applied to a rowing project, is we have enough information that we can look at a particular area of the world and say, okay, here's the project, here's what the person wants to do. They want to row from this point to that point. And based on climatology, we can have an idea of whether or not that's even possible. There are some certain routes that just can't be done in a rowboat. It's just impossible. And climate or climatology is what we use to make that determination. But when the actual row is in progress, we're dealing with weather. And that's why things don't always necessarily match with climatology in the short term. You can say, yes, this area predominantly has northeast wind. Well, in a two-week period or a one-month period, that may not be the case. And so that's what we have to deal with in the near term. We look at climatology to plan, but we deal with weather when it's actually happening.
Got it. So in terms of the what people need to know, we all need to realize that the weather may change, and it will change on a daily basis, but we can't use that to judge far out and make huge guesses about the patterns and cycles and systems that are going to be coming in. Lee, do you have any, we all know about the El Nino and La Nina being on the Pacific coast here in California. Are those in effect changing the weather that Roz is experiencing right now? Is that part of it?
Well, we are in an El Nino period still. And again, there are people that's their life work is to study that sort of thing. And I think it's generally assumed that the El Nino is in the decline and probably will be no longer later this summer or fall. And that El Nino kind of falls somewhere in between weather and climate as far as I'm concerned, because it's a long-term phenomena, but it's not 10, 20 years at a time. It tends to be in a shorter cycle.
Right.
Now, what El Nino can do in the area where Roz is that it can reduce the total number of tropical cyclones. Luckily, she's rowing outside of the normal tropical cyclone season, so that's not necessarily such a big deal.
But it's an even. It's great, Roz. That's wonderful that it's less of a concern, right? Is she there?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, that reminds me. At one point, I thought I'd found a cunning plan that was going to make it easier to get to Australia. I looked at the weather charts that Lee described earlier and spotted that between November and March, the wind seemed to be in a rather more helpful direction. So I wrote to Lee saying, what about this? And he just wrote back saying, cyclone season. I sort of weighed it up because I imagined myself struggling for 100 days trying to get to somewhere to Australia against headwinds and sidewinds and all kinds of unhelpful conditions. And I didn't really fancy the prospect of all that frustration. And I was weighing that against the prospect of 90 days of favourable winds with 10 days of abject terror during a cyclone. And thought, well, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad trade-off if it meant I could actually get to Australia. But then the following week, Lee sent me a satellite photograph of a particular, what was it called? Was it Uri or something like that? Tropical cyclone? It started with U anyway. And
yeah.
There were winds of up to, I think, 125 knots at the centre. And I went, maybe not. Maybe that wouldn't be so much fun after all. Maybe I'll take the 100 days of frustration or accept that I won't go to Australia rather than facing formidable winds like that, because I would probably survive that because my boat's good at self-righting. But having experienced the washing machine simulation, the capsize test in 2007, I'm not in any particular hurry to repeat that. So I was very happy with Lee's tentative advice to avoid cyclones and go for the safer option instead.
Lee, did you have any more comments about the El Nino? So is it's lessening the number of cyclones that she would be up against, but she's not she's not really in that time period anyway. That season has passed more or less.
Yeah,
and as she gets into the winter.
Yeah, in this case, the El Nino, whether or not it's there or not, really didn't matter that much from the cyclone standpoint. And with El Nino, we go back to the short-term nature. Well, I say short-term. Roz probably won't think it's so short 100 days from now. But if there isn't El Nino or La Nina or some other pattern like that, generally the projects that I'm dealing with have time schedules that have been laid out without that in mind. And so it really doesn't... It's not a big concern. It doesn't play into the whole decision process much because if I were to tell Roz, well, yeah, you know, there's an El Nino out there and it might add 3 knots to your wind or something like that, chances are she's not going to change and say, well, okay, I'll wait until there's not an El Nino. The projects don't have that sort of flexibility on the timing. And the impact, again, it tends to be long term, so the shorter term nature of projects, generally, it's just not worth making huge plans or canceling plans based on something like an El Nino.
Right, and you would not have canceled based on an El Nino, right, Roz?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite catch the question.
Oh, I was just wondering, you would not an El Nino or a La Nina. Weather cycle probably would not have affected your overall decision of when to start this rowing project, right?
Probably not, no, because I didn't really want to leave my boat in Tarawa for another year because Rusk never sleeps, and I knew that my boat wouldn't be getting in any better shape while she was sitting out in the... Well, luckily she was sheltered from most of the tropical sun, but I just knew it made sense to get on with things. Lee, while I've got you on the phone, can I ask you a question about potentials for next year? Which way do the winds generally go through the Torres Strait? So I realise I'm putting you on the spot a bit here because it's not something you've discussed before.
It's great. I think it's a wonderful question.
Well, yeah, and when I get a question like that, I've probably decline to answer because I you know, if it's an area that I haven't dealt with recently, I mean, yeah. My clients are spread all over the world, and some areas I'm very familiar with, and other areas I'm not, and so I would always want to look at the patterns and look at the historic wind patterns and all that to give an answer, because I don't like just going off the cuff and find out later that, oops, no, it wasn't exactly right that time. So,
sure,
but
yeah,
if you
I'm
give
sorry.
Me a couple
sorry,
minutes, you know, if you want to talk, I can go and try to find out.
Do some research really quick.
Having said that, I'm not going to do anything differently this year. I'm just being curious to know, but it's not urgent, and it's probably not going to make any difference to anything that happens this year. But trying to make sure that I don't end up again in that situation of you can't get there from here.
Yep.
Because it would be very easy to row myself into a blind alley.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just wondering, do you normally communicate with Lee through email while you're out there? Do you have any other questions that you know, you have him on the phone right now?
we do normally do email, which is working just so far. So I won't spring any other unexpected questions on Lee. He's doing a fantastic job so far, and very happy to be working with him from his home in Minnesota. I mean, really, how much further from the ocean could you be? But he's got his finger on the pulse of the weather, so he's definitely providing very good data so far, and it is nice to know more or less what Mother Nature has in store for me from one day to the next.
And Lee, do you have any comments or anything that you were saving up to tell Roz that you haven't told her yet, or any information that would help her out while you're while she's here on the phone?
I don't think I have anything specifically for her, but she brings up a good point, and your question brought that out, is how do we communicate? And when I did my first rowing project, that was a few years back, and if we talked on the phone periodically with a connection that would tend to break up and go away regularly, that was as good as it got. Whereas now, one of the big things I think that helps the rowers is having good communications and being able to stay in touch. I've talked with rowers before that who have had a long stretch of bad weather, their food is running short, their water maker doesn't work properly, they're just sick and tired of being out there, and you can hear it in their voice, you can hear the desperation and despondency, and you can really tell that they're just about ready to give up. And in some ways, the improvements in technology, which makes email almost the exclusive way to deal with it, I lose that. Because I'm not actually talking to them in person, so I don't really get that feeling unless they specifically write it in their email saying, I'm sick and tired of this, I can't stand it anymore. In some ways, I mean, it's great that it's more reliable, and it gives us more flexibility in what can be sent back and forth. But on the other hand, sometimes you kind of miss that connection. However, again, having said that, because the email is so much better, that allows Roz to have that connection back home to family members and friends, and she doesn't need to share that stuff with me. I'm not her only contact, whereas in the past, sometimes for rowers, a lot of times I was.
Right. Yeah, Ron?
Yeah, just a couple of points on that. Yeah, when I was doing the Atlantic, it was my poor mother who called all that, because I didn't have a weatherman then. And it was my mother who bore the brunt of my emotional roller coastering. But it was also just making me smile a bit, what you were saying about the reliable communications, because last night it took me about an hour to get my satellite phone and my laptop to talk to each other. I was ready to take a pair of them and chuck them overboard. I was so frustrated with it. I've got a satellite phone that's got what is poorly named as an IntelliDock, which is quite possibly the just piece of equipment that I've... Anyway, sorry, off of no rants there. But I've been having some issues with it, let's say. So email has maybe not been quite as easy as it may appear. And also, unfortunately, we're having some problems with the tracker unit on board my boat, which means that the only way that I'm able to update my position is at the moment is with my daily blog. It's not actually tracking me in real time, which is something that we're hoping to remedy, but it's not clear what the problem is. The tracker has got good, excellent GPS signal, but then it's just not able to send it over the Iridium telephone network to update my position on the ROS tracker. But we're working on it, and hopefully we'll manage to find a remedy in due course. Because it'd be nice to get back to that kind of real-time location update that we had last year.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed on that one. But, yeah, there have been a few technical glitches, a few gremlins on board this time around.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll get past the gremlins.
As long as my watermaker keeps working, yes. And as long as the watermaker keeps going, I've got no serious complaints.
Yeah, we want you to have fresh water. We want you to have good weather, and we want you to have we wish you would have the wind at your back.
That was all. I row his face backwards, so I actually want the wind on
in my face. Okay, then. All right, yeah. Never mind.
Well, so far so good. All is well on board the Brocade.
Wonderful. Well, we are getting upwards of 40, 45 minutes here, so I don't want to keep you too long because you are sitting statically in the middle of the day in order to talk on the phone. So, Roz, did you have anything that you'd love to tell people who are following your progress? I know there are a lot of people who are in the chat room right now who are wishing you safe travels and sending their love and their best wishes to you. Is there anything?
Oh, thank you, people in the chat room. That's very kind of you. Just one final thing, and that is that hopefully Eco Heroes is going live today. We were adversely affected, strangely, by the volcano in Iceland, because one of the programmers was on vacation in Europe and wasn't able to get online regularly, and then wasn't able to get back to his usual internet connection because all the flights in Europe were grounded because of all this volcanic ash in the air. But hopefully it's going live either today or tomorrow. So if people haven't already registered, I would take it as a personal favour if they would head on over to ecoheroes.me and log in there and check out our new Eco Challenge game community social media with Bang Funny Thing.
Wonderful. Yeah, I hope people do that and become Eco Heroes and in their own way, find small ways every day that they can help to make an impact on the planet. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, Kiki. Great talking with you. And thanks, Lee. Nice to hear your voice again. And you're doing a great job. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Roz. Thank you so much. Have a fabulous week. I look forward to talking with you next week once again.
Same here. I'll speak to you then.
Okay. Bye. Strong rowing. Bye. And that was Roz Rose out somewhere near Nauru. Is that how she pronounced it? Nauru? We'll get these South Pacific Island names straight one of these days. Lee, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for the information. We didn't get into the decadal Pacific Ocean systems. There are many more systems out there, but probably in a similar way to El Nino and La Nina, the larger systems are not necessarily the ones that are going to dictate strongly whether or not she's going to row or not row or make it to Australia or Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, I think it tends to become a hour by hour, day by day kind of thing rather than a long-term plan.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. And if anybody is interested in getting in touch with you, if they have their own adventure that they would like to go on and need a weather forecaster for, how can they reach you?
Probably easiest is just email. Email address is weather@oceanmet. It's Met with an M, as in Mary, .com. And we can go from there.
Wonderful. And I guess good forecasting? Is that what we say to you? Do you hope for changes in the skies and the weather? I guess it makes it more interesting for your job to see changes happen.
Yeah, with my clients spread out everywhere, you know, there's always somebody that's got some weather issue, so that's what makes the job interesting. That I have yachts. I do super yachts and ocean racing and things like that, and there's always somebody with some kind of a weather problem, and it affects everybody differently. You know, they're worried about getting into a port to refuel before the refueling shuts down for the weekend, or they've got guests that are getting sick, or it's always something.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad that there's always something for you to forecast. So thank you very much. It was really, really great talking to you.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thanks. And that was Lee Bruce from oceanmet.com. He is a weather forecaster. He is the chief forecaster for his company, Ocean Met. Ocean meteorology, and like you said, you can find him at oceanmet.com and email him at weather@oceanmet.com. thank you for joining us today. Thanks for joining in this journey. Thanks for coming along and checking in on Roz to see how she's doing. And it sounds as though she's still doing very well. She seems to be in a very happy place right now, pleasantly rowing across the South Pacific. And we'll see where she ends up. We still have weeks and weeks and weeks of this journey to go. And I hope that you will stay with me and with Roz and with our future guests. Next week, we will be talking with Martin Troost. He is the author of a book about the cannibals of the South Pacific, Vanuatu and Tuwara area. I think it's The Sex Lives of Cannibals, I believe, is the title of the book. Anyway, he will be speaking with us about cannibalism in the South Pacific, and he's a friend of Roz's, so as well, we'll be checking in on her. And in the meantime, you can keep tabs on Roz until next week. You can check out her blog at rozsavage.com or her Twitter feed at Roz Savage. And you can download Roz Rose from iTunes or check out past episodes either on her blog, on her website, rozsavage.com, or at twit.tv/Roz. I'll be back here next week, 5 p.m. Pacific time. But where in the Pacific will Roz be? We have to wait until then. Until then, keep rowing.